Welcome to Cows, Plows, and Things That Grow. This is the Utah Farm Bureau Podcast, a place to learn about what's happening in agriculture around the state of Utah. Utah Farm Bureau is a voluntary membership organization with 36,000 members. Our mission is to inspire all Utah families to connect, succeed, and grow through the miracle of agriculture. We're delighted to have you join us. I'm Dan Bomas. Today, we're talking to some of the leaders of the Utah Farm Bureau, beginning with our president, Val J. Rigby. We'll also hear from CEO Spencer Gibbons and from Terry Camp, our vice president of public policy, about some of the issues Utah Farm Bureau will be focusing on during this session of the Utah Legislature. First, let's hear from Val J. Rigby. He's a farmer from Newton in Cache County. The Rigby farm was homesteaded by his great-great-grandfather in pioneer times. Today, it produces wheat, alfalfa, and safflower with a small beef cattle herd. Val J. has been involved in Farm Bureau since he graduated from Utah State University.
It's given me an opportunity through the Farm Bureau to connect with people throughout the state and be able to grow my business, have folks with similar concerns. We found that throughout Utah, most of our farms are family farms. They have some of the same challenges. We look at agriculture today, and profitability is one of our biggest challenges. We look at those farms, and our margins that we operate on are getting narrower and narrower, and we are required to do more to just be able to keep those families on the farm in Utah.
And you're looking at resource challenges, too. Water is one of the biggest issues that you have to think about and plan for.
Yeah, we've been talking about water a lot in the last few years. We've had a lot of legislation, a lot of programs. Dealing with water, I think one of the most inspiring things that we've seen is our farmers throughout the state have stepped up and invested millions of dollars in systems to conserve water, because most of the grants that our legislators provided through the Water Optimization Program have been matching funds. And so these families have stepped up out of their own pockets to pay for programs that will conserve water for our state. And I think that's a great message we need to say and commend these folks in agriculture for doing that.
You have also other businesses that get involved in this, suppliers of agricultural equipment, suppliers of seeds and all kinds of other supplies, that inputs that go into the process. And they are also involved with Farm Bureau?
Yeah, we've been really lucky. We've got some great sponsors and great partners in agriculture. We just completed our convention, and we had a lot of these sponsors came and helped us out, gave awards to our young farmers and ranchers, and they help us throughout the year, because we truly feel like we have to have these partnerships in agriculture here in the state of Utah so that we can go forward. And like all of agriculture, we're a small segment of the population, but all of the population eats, so we're all connected together, and we want to be good partners in all of that.
When you're at this meeting, farmers walk up and shake your hand. What do they want to talk to you about?
They want to talk about regulations, having to comply with both federal and state regulations, about programs. They're concerned about water. They're concerned about how they're going to grow their crops and feed their families if they don't have the water that those crops need. They're concerned about their families and just all of the things that everybody else in the population is worried about the state of the world today and economy. Trade practices and trade is a big part of agriculture, because we need to be able to sell the products that we raise, that we grow here in the state of Utah, and we need to have an economy that allows for robust pricing and a good pricing model so we can continue to preserve this agriculture land.
I've heard it also said that the number one export of Utah, rural Utah in particular, is smart young people. And, how do you keep them down on the farm once they've seen the big city?
Isn't that great that we can teach those young people that how to work, how to be educated, and that they can be good citizens and contribute to society. And that's a great challenge to have. I would answer the question that we need to be profitable. That's the most important thing that we can do. And, you know, the citizens of Utah, our legislature, can keep that in mind as we pass laws and create policy, that we have to do things that don't get in the way of agriculture, that allow free trade to happen, that allow us to succeed. Sometimes we receive a lot of mandates to comply with different things, and they don't come with funding, both from the national level and state level, and they get in our way. For example, you know, we just had to complete, all of us, our BOI registration at the beginning of this year. It's has to do with corporate identity, because most of our farms have some type of corporate structure to protect us against liability. So we had to prove the ownership of these entities. And I received personally four or five different letters from attorney firms that were offering to fill out these forms for me for $400 to $1,000. And well, at the time, I felt like I would just muddle through it, and I filled it out myself because I didn't feel like I had the extra $400 to come from something at the end of the year from my family to fill that out. And that's an example of a mandate that we were given and no funding, and it just came out of farmers in Utah's pockets.
And that's a state requirement, or?
It's a federal.
Okay. All right. So if you're going to have some kind of a corporate structure that limits your liability, then that's a requirement that you have to do. What are some of the other regulations that you say is a frequent topic when farmers talk to you?
Well, this last year, we've had high path avian influenza come through the state. It's affected our poultry flocks and got into our dairies. And we had many of those dairies quarantined. And some of our dairymen felt that some of the regulations on there were kind of heavy-handed. As they got quarantined, then they weren't able to move animals. As they found out that the cows recovered very quickly, it was more like a sickness in there. They felt that it really affected their livelihood. And they worried that people would not drink milk, even though we had had many studies that showed that none of the virus stayed in the pasteurized milk, that it was completely safe after exhaustive studies on that. But just the perception of coming in quarantine when it was just mostly a sickness for those dairy cows.
Have you seen sales numbers drop for milk?
Incrementally, just some small, but the concern at the time was that maybe it was a little heavy-handed in our implementation. And we recognize that we have to be careful. It affects our nation's food supply, and we want to be careful with our food supply. And we need to do everything we can to help our consumer confidence. But those are things that our dairymen and our farmers have been really concerned about.
How about your poultry producers? They were in a much more difficult spot.
Yeah, and it's been really devastating. You know, some of those have had to depopulate their entire flocks twice. And
that's necessary. It may be a little difficult to talk about.
Yeah, it is difficult to talk about. And the reality is most of those chickens, it's really fatal, that disease in a poultry house. So they come in. Most of them would have died fairly soon anyway, most of that population. But it's kind of a necessary thing to do slow or stop the spread of that disease, because it's really virulent in the poultry population.
But in the short run, you also have a significant pressure on the price of eggs, and everybody's talking about that.
Yeah, we've all seen that at the store when we go in, and we're bringing eggs from all over the country to try and meet our needs locally, because we've had it here in Utah in our poultry population. And you know, our turkey growers are quite, we talked about chickens, but our turkey growers are really concerned. We've had to be really careful, and they're looking at, you know, migratory birds coming in and coming through. We're looking at all sorts of vectors that could be transferring the disease here in our state.
Well, you look at some of these issues, and then you have a legislative session coming up. Do you want to see the legislature address any of these issues specifically, or what are the public policy issues that you see need attention from our legislature?
Well, during the year, in our Farm Bureau, in each county, we have a series of meetings. We start in the spring where we look at policies that are coming up for the year, and we'll go through in a county, and each county can talk about things that are affecting them and their county, and then we have a chance to study it during the summer months, maybe gain some information, bring it up when our legislature has their interim meetings as we get ready. Then in the fall, each county has another meeting, and they submit policies to our state Farm Bureau organization as we get ready for our convention. And we just had our convention in November. And then in that convention, we take all of those policies that come from throughout the state. We get together, we discuss them. We try to come up with something that is balanced for the whole state and is a thoughtful, careful process. And then we'll vote on them, and we'll actually adopt a policy book for that year. Policies all the way from energy, you know, a big thing that we've written quite a few comments about this year is siting of solar energy on public lands and solar plants, and the impact that takes to our grazers, because, you know, we've for decades we've been talking about multiple use on these public lands, and our grazers have worked with the public, and we've adopted a system that is working. We come in and we site a big solar arrays on those public lands. Well, now it becomes single use. Nothing else can go there. And in this past year, it was proposed that 32 million acres in the West be available for siting of solar on our public lands, with 6 million of those in Utah, or 5 million in Utah. And that's pretty significant to our grazers to have 5 million acres taken out of production.
Val J. Rigby is president of the Utah Farm Bureau. He lives in the Cache County community of Newton. Attention, Utah Farm Bureau members, we've partnered with Abenity to offer you a bigger and better member benefits platform. With Abenity, you'll get access to all your favorite Farm Bureau discounts, plus thousands of new savings opportunities at over a million locations across the U.S. and Canada. Whether you're planning a trip, shopping, dining out, or enjoying local attractions, savings are just a tap away. Download the app today and start saving instantly. Learn more about utahfarmbureau.org/member benefits. Utah Farm Bureau and Abenity, your gateway to exclusive perks. This is Cows, Plows, and Things That Grow, the Utah Farm Bureau podcast. I'm Dan Bomas. You may have seen the Utah Farm Bureau offices in Sandy, Utah, at about 9800 South State. They have 16 employees who work to advance the interests of agriculture in the state, helping to assure an affordable, reliable supply of food, something that isn't always simple or easy. The Utah Farm Bureau staff is led by CEO Spencer Gibbons. He says a podcast is a way to reach members, as well as giving the public a look at issues in agriculture and Farm Bureau's work to support it.
We live in a day and age where people just don't turn on the news at 10 o'clock, and they don't... There are many mediums that they can get their information, and this is some unexplored territory that the Utah Farm Bureau is looking into, is this podcast medium, so that as farmers are out bouncing around in their tractors or their trucks, hopefully this is one way that they can hear more about their organization and some of the things that we're up to. But then we're hoping that we reach a broader audience that allows them to see what this organization does and why we feel like there's so much value in the things that we do in agriculture.
So, for example, what is something that Farm Bureau does that isn't well recognized in the community?
We would like to think that we are an absolute fierce advocate for protecting private property rights. We feel like that we live in one of the fastest urbanizing states in the country, and we see 67% of our land is publicly held. So there's not a lot of land left in the state, and as we continue to have people come and business come, it's getting more and more difficult to do the things that our pioneer forefathers did in the way that we're accustomed to. And so we feel like it's absolutely necessary and critical that we advocate for these private property rights so farmers and ranchers can continue to farm and ranch and grow the food and the things that we need.
Water rights included under that heading.
Absolutely. Water rights are fundamental, and it's no secret that we live in the second driest state in the country. We, as people move here and as we grow, more people are going to want to have a drink. More people are going to want to be able to wash their clothes, flush their toilet, recreate. And all of those things take water. And so our lawmakers and others are looking to where to get the water, and farmers and ranchers have had secured those rights, a century ago.
But the law is evolving. The society is evolving. You need to perhaps look for ways that things can be done differently in the future.
Absolutely. I think that farmers are innovators, and they, as they become, as markets pressure, there are market pressures, they look for ways to get more out of less. I think that's a very farmer rancher mentality, is how do I get more out of less? And water is certainly an area that where, we want our families to come back and live here, and so we know that there's just going to be more demands on that very limited resource. And so of course we want to protect those rights, but I think that farmers are every bit as committed to protecting the resource, not only for themselves so that they can continue to grow the food that we enjoy, but also so people can have a high quality of life here in Utah that we're all accustomed to. Now, will that look different? I think so. As we move into the upcoming decades, I think life will look different than it did when I was a kid or when my dad was a kid or whatever. But it's not a bad thing.
There are lots of pressures on farm families. And I recall the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food starting a program a few years ago to help address the risk of suicide among farmers and farm families. What does the Farm Bureau do in this area where you're supporting families?
Yeah, this mental health awareness has become a very... we are becoming much more aware of the impacts that it can have, particularly on these farm families. I grew up in a farm family. I have seven brothers and sisters, and I didn't know that we didn't have a great deal because we always had food and we always had clothes. But I know that now that I'm adult and I've raised my family and I understand all of the things, I understand the pressure that my mom and dad were under to keep us all fed. And those pressures, I think, are increasing even more in this industry, where margins are tighter, where there's more urban encroachment. And so all of the things that we do, which for many years we felt pretty isolated, and we had some real freedom and latitude. But as people build, communities grow, moving a tractor from field to field on Antelope Drive in Davis County, that's a hard thing to do.
You're listening to Cows, Plows, and Things That Grow. We've just heard from Spencer Gibbon, CEO of the Utah Farm Bureau. Up next, it's Terry Camp. He's Utah Farm Bureau's Vice President of Public Policy. His job, along with Wade Garrett, Utah Farm Bureau's Vice President of Advocacy and Strategic Relationships, is to make sure that issues important to agriculture in Utah get the attention and support of Utah legislators and other decision makers in the state. Terry has worked in Washington on the staff of Senator Orrin Hatch and with the House Committee on Natural Resources. He says advocacy is at the heart of the Farm Bureau mission.
I think it's really crucial for our farmers and ranchers to have a strong voice in the halls of power at the legislature. And those halls of power are at every level, really. Whether it's in Congress, our state legislature, county commissions, those meetings, city council meetings, at every level of government, it matters that farmers are represented and having their voices heard, including last night I was at a town hall meeting with some of our legislators in Bountiful, and they were talking about water, and this guy stood up and defended farmers and ranchers and talked about alfalfa, and I was really proud of this guy. I didn't know him. I went up to him after the meeting to thank him, for representing us so well. But it just shows the value of having our members involved and engaged in the political process. The other thing I wanted to mention, a few days ago I was looking back at kind of the history of Farm Bureau's founding, and we were first organized in 1916, and our first president, a guy named D.D. McKay, he was the book I was reading talked about him as a man of action, and there was this quote from a guy named W. Preston Thomas. He was the Weber County Farm Bureau agent at the time, and he remarked that McKay is proving himself a remarkable man of action. He is tireless in his efforts for the farms and general public. Through organization, he has already brought about a saving of many thousands of dollars to farmers. And so I think really as government relations staff at Farm Bureau, we strive to kind of carry on D.D. McKay's legacy. We try to be men and women of action and try to work really tirelessly for the farms and the general public to help keep farming and ranching economically viable throughout our state. And so it's something we take very seriously.
Is your advocacy work in part based on keeping things the way they are, or does public policy have to evolve with the society and technology?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I think it can be a little bit of both. I think some farm practices are, tried and true and have lasted throughout time as standards and, things we should strive for good animal husbandry and other things. But absolutely, we have to grow and evolve. And as the state grows and as there's pressures on farmlands and there's pressures on, finite resources like water, we absolutely have to be willing to grow and evolve with changing times. And I think that can be hard sometimes for farmers and ranchers. We have a lot of multi-generational farms in Utah, and we definitely hear that from time to time, like, grandpa did it this way, or my great-grandpa did it this way, and I'm going to keep doing it this way. And that can be fine in some circumstances, but in others, we understand that we're called upon to do more with less and to be good stewards of the environment. And so we're constantly trying to do better, both for our, communities and families, but the state as a whole and the nation as a whole. So farmers, as I've traveled around the state and I've visited people's farms, I'm just perpetually amazed at how adaptable and creative and savvy, tech savvy sometimes. I think there's sometimes a public perception about farmers that is just completely erroneous. Farmers are some of the earliest adopters of technology, and we're some of the most, adaptable to changing conditions out of any industry I've ever seen. So,
what are you planning to focus on in this legislative session that's a top concern?
Yeah, so certainly water is always top of mind. Although we don't think this is going to be a super water intensive session, there's still already 15 or 16 water bills that we know of sort of varying degrees of impact. A lot of them are very technical in nature and kind of cleaning up existing code or bringing us into the 21st century with some of our water rights processes, whether that's, you know, allowing for digital submissions and signatures and things like that. So some of them are very technical in nature, but there will still be a lot of water legislation. But I guess the other point I would want to talk about is I'm amazed by how many things touch agriculture and affect agriculture. Since taking this job a couple of years ago, just the breadth of things that affect our industry has been frankly almost overwhelming. the regulations and statutory hurdles that farmers have to jump over to just do what they do best is staggering sometimes. So I guess also in response to your question, there's a broad range of things we're monitoring and that we'll be working on this session. One of the big priorities we have is securing ongoing funding for the Utah FFA, Future Farmers of America. This is a longstanding program in our schools, career and technical education. And each year we have to go back to the legislature and be a strong advocate for getting funding for that program statewide so that they can have their coordinators and that they can have a unified state program. And so we're going to be calling on the legislature to provide ongoing funding for that program. We think it's critical. We think it's proven itself. And it really does. It changes the lives of the students that are involved with it. If we can get students involved in taking care of animals, learning about where their food comes from, even if they don't go on to be farmers the rest of their lives or ranchers the rest of their lives, they can still be advocates for our industry going forward. And the connections they make and the friendships and the leadership opportunities are honestly unparalleled. So it's also a great program. We have obviously a growing immigrant population, and getting those kind of students involved in this program is fantastic. Another area of focus will be on conservation easements and possibly a bill related to changes to the Lee Ray McAllister program. So in Utah and really throughout the United States, there aren't a lot of options for preserving farmland and keeping farmers farming. So you can just generally try to keep agriculture economically viable and improve it. We've experimented a lot with agritourism and growing that industry. And then one of the other options is conservation easements. And so we've had a focus in recent years on trying to get more funding toward conservation easements in the state. Essentially what that means is you have the option, you in some circumstances can sell future development rights, and then you have money for your retirement or whatever you need to pass the farm to a future generation and to keep that farmland permanently, in farmland or open space. It's not for everyone and it doesn't work in every situation, but we like to give people options and try to keep prime farmland in farming and agriculture.
As Vice President of Public Policy, Terry Camp will be working with Wade Garrett, Utah Farm Bureau's Vice President of Advocacy and Strategic Relationships, to make sure the interests of farm families in Utah are protected and advanced at the Utah State Legislature. You can learn more about specific legislation Utah Farm Bureau is following on the Utah Farm Bureau website under the Policy and Action tab. We're pleased you could join us for this edition of Cows, Plows, and Things That Grow. We hope you'll listen to upcoming conversations looking at issues from water use and development to encouraging young people through the National FFA organization. We hope you'll let us know what you think as well through your comments on the Utah Farm Bureau website. I'm Dan Bomas. Thanks for listening.